But I can say that right now it's the silver. We're a pure silver player. We're highly leveraged to silver. And if you believe in silver, you get more leverage out of the stock we have than you're going to get out of the silver. And Jerry,
Yeah.
you've run the numbers on several occasions.
Definitely. Yeah, so we look at this quarterly filings and obviously a lot of our peer groups, Steve, and we also follow BMO's excellent silver pages. So you'll follow that Hecla, First Majestic, any of the major silver players are now more of a gold and diversified player. They obviously all report in silver equivalents, but specifically on the mid cap side, you're looking at maybe 50%. On the large cap side, less than 40% really come from silver.
Good day, everybody. Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks. And today I have with me both Fred Davidson, President and CEO of Impact Silver. And with him, we also have Jerry Wong, VP of Finance and HR. I hope I didn't brutalize that too much, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. It's
Really
a
good. Thanks, Steve. Big
great
follower.
business right now.
Awesome. Well, Fred, let's jump right in. If you can give us the 50,000 foot view, just kind of where you guys are, first of all, trading, if you want to start there, your website, your ticker, and let's jump into your projects and what your company is all about. Let's start with your ticker and your website.
Jerry, maybe you can pull that all that up
Definitely.
because
Yeah,
we're
very
doing
simple,
first
Steve.
off.
For sure. Yeah, we trade on the TSX Venture under IPT. That's Ian Paul Thomas. On the US side, on the OTCQB, we're on ISVLF. That's Ian, Sam, Victor, Larry, Frank. Website very simple, all one word, impactsilver.com.
Awesome. Great. Fred, let's go to you. Let's t tell me about your projects. What kind of company are you? Where's your jurisdiction? What are you digging up?
Yeah, we're basically in the mining business, although we do some exploration as well. But we're in Mexico, and we've been operating one of those mines now for 20 years. It's called Zacualpan. We have one other mine that's up in Chihuahua. Zacualpan's in the southern part of Mexico. And Zacualpan is primarily, by the way, silver, lead, zinc, primarily silver. It's probably 97% of the value is silver, which makes us probably the purest silver play around. Then up north in Chihuahua, we have a mine called Plomosas, and it's a CRD, a carbon replacement deposit. It's one we're still trying to get some grips on because these things are very complex, and we're finding it as complex as we expected it to be. Working on it, it's got prospectively, yes, lead and zinc and silver. Actually, zinc, very high grade zinc, with some silver. And then as we go north on that property, we're getting into copper gold targets that we're now testing. So those two are sort of our really active ones. And then we have a third project very near Zacualpan. It's called Capire. And Capire is a volcanogenic massive sulfide deposit with a small 200 ton a day mill adjacent. And that one, we're going to be looking at putting it back into production. Interestingly enough, not on the VMS, but rather on a new discovery we're making out in the west part of that general area. And it's called Carlos Pacheco, Noche Buena. And it tends to be giving us some fairly high grade silver, gold, copper, and lead results. So it's a brand new animal. Because it's going to be metallurgically complex, we're going to process it at Capire and keep maintaining the mill and mine at Zacualpan going on the silver, lead, zinc. So that's what we're doing right now. Busy time.
Well, Fred, you mentioned your flagship. Is it called the Royal Mines of Zacualpan? If you can confirm what are you digging up there, and you just tell me about your grade, the scale. I know that you guys have, if you want to talk about
Absolutely.
the deposits there.
Zacualpan occupies an area of about 200 square kilometers. And the name, the Royal Mines of Zacualpan, came from the time of Cortez, the Spanish conquistador, who actually was mining in the exact same location 500 years ago. fact, next year we're celebrating the 500th year of mining in the district. We do have the grades are variable. We mine from about five mines, one of which, the Guadalupe mine, is the biggest. And the grades run in the 170, 180 grams on average we're putting through the mill of silver. But very recently, and this is why our first quarter looked rather dramatically good, we've just opening up a mine or a vein actually in the Guadalupe mine, which runs exceptionally high grades. And the end result in the first quarter, we were running well over 200 grams a ton for the whole quarter. And as we draw down from the Kena, we see those spurts of grade rising and falling, depending where we're mining at any one time. So it's the busy one. We're running about 450 tons a day there. The mill's capable of 550. But because these are epithermal veins, you do development, then you can do mining, then you do mining, then you do development. They tend to interfere. So it's very hard to get that number up over 550.
So you're a producer and you've been producing a lot of silver, primarily. Is that what I'm understanding? And then secondly, if you
Primarily,
can.
yep, about 14 million ounces to date while we've been operating it.
And then you guys had some, like you said, dramatic numbers recently. Is that primarily due to rising silver prices? Do the finances work at lower rates? Or, and I don't expect price of silver to go like plummet anytime soon or anything like that, but if you can tell me kind of the reason for the high production.
Yeah, we obviously the first quarter was fairly spectacular. We ended up in the first quarter generating about, I forget the exact number, I think it was $31 million. We're talking Canadian dollars, which is almost triple what it did last year. Part of that was obviously the price of silver had gone up quite a bit. Part of it was the grade that we're now pushing through, and we increased our tonnage as well. And so in the first quarter, all things came together, and we're highly leveraged to the price of silver. So silver pops up, it goes right to the bottom line. Silver drops off, goes right to the bottom line. But we've been sustaining ourselves doing this for 20 years, so we got a pretty good solid background of where we mine and what we mine.
So, well, first of all, what's your first quarter for your company? And then, secondly, do you expect these numbers to continue to rise? I mean, what can we expect?
Well, the first quarter, as I say, was $31 million gross and 11 million net profits at the end of the quarter. We're not going to see that universally because A, the price of silver has dropped about $20-$25 an ounce. So that makes a big impact. We were mining the Kena, and again, these things fluctuate. When you mine, you can't develop because of these vein situations. So we were mining quite a bit at that time. We'll probably see that falling off for the next quarter or two as we do more development, but we're simply opening up the Kena to be bigger and better. So we're going to see that pop up and down fairly dramatically, but I suspect it's going to be a good solid looking year for the rest of the year. The one I mentioned previously, the Noche Buena Carlos Pacheco, we're just into developing that. And some of the grades there have been exceptional. And the end result is we've been developing it. We're doing more drilling there, but we get a result like, and we announced it, and I don't think the market even understood it. We had 114 grams gold and 1,200 grams silver and 1.1% copper. Over, it was a mining width of roughly about 0.6 meter, but it's within a much bigger area, which is up to about 9.5 meters wide. Grade's a little lower, but you always like to quote the high numbers first, obviously. So yeah, that area, once we start bringing that into production, and we're anticipating using the Capire on it, and we don't see that coming into production to probably the end of first quarter next year, maybe second quarter. These things take a little bit of time.
And then the where does Capire end and the Royal Mines as a Zacualpan end? I mean, begin. I mean, is there like
Yeah,
a
well,
road
they're
between them?
it's at the, if you will, a map like a say a shield. It's at the bottom of the shield, and on
Huh.
the top of the shield is where the crawl pad is. So these veins, as you say, the epithermal veins tend to run typical. I'm starting to use my hands. Left, west, northwest, southeast, and because Capire is a different type of deposit, the VMS,
Yeah.
it's normally formed at the bottom of the ocean, comes up, and it ends up looking like a layered sandwich, and you mine it under controlled conditions.
Fred, I want to talk about Plomosas, if I hope I'm saying that correctly. I think that's a high-grade zinc silver project in Chihuahua. Is that has that project been suspended? Is that what's the status there?
Actually, we have. Part of the reason is the structures that we're mining with a VMS, sorry, it's like this. With a CRD, what happens is an intrusive comes up and follows the weaker rock, the limestone, and percolates through the rock. And what we found is we had taken it over from another company, and their understanding of the mine and their mining method was such that it created, trying to follow it, has created all sorts of issues. And so what we're ending up doing, we're wasting more money and time chasing their theory. So what we did is we shut it down, and then we put a couple of rigs in there and brought in a specialist in this type of structure. And we're reevaluating the mining method. So it's what you do. You run into these things, you sit back and learn. Meanwhile, we've got exploration going on that property because it's over 7 kilometers long. They've only been active in about 600 meters of that 7 kilometers.
Okay.
And there are more targets in the area. And as we go north, interesting enough, in an area called La Chona, we're running into, of all things, copper and gold. And it could be as a result of this CRD, this intrusive coming up, but it's not following the limestone, if you will. It's come up as a vein. So we're trying to establish that right now. We'll be drilling that late summer, I guess, early fall.
And is that going to be open pit?
Well, we don't know on that one. The others are all underground. The
Okay.
VMS was going to be an open pit, but it's going to be set aside until we do the Noche Buena stuff. But this one is early stage.
Okay.
We're getting a lot of trenching. We haven't put a drill hole in it yet, but the trenching is certainly getting some interesting results.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that getting an open pit permit in Mexico is not the easiest. If you can tell us a little bit about permitting process, the timeline, and kind of maybe the obstacles and opportunity you see here being in Mexico.
They've come off of from the previous government there. They came up with this open pit, but from what we understand, because there's certain states there that basically 80% of their mining is open pit. So what they have said is that it has to be in the national benefit. So politicians being what politicians are, I'm sure we can establish a national benefit. We've already permitted the Capire VMS, so if
You
we
have.
anything want to mine it, we can mine it. The
Okay.
other one, I'd say at Plomosas, and it's only the far end, which would be the Plomosas open pit. It's in the middle of a desert. There's nobody around within 20 kilometers, so nobody's going to be offended by it. And I think we can demonstrate that it creates no issue. Of course, if this is an underground issue, it's not a problem. But if it's an open pit, my counsel sort of advises us it could take a little time, but you should be able to permit it.
Fred, if you can tell me a little bit about the roads and the access to water, the infrastructure that's around. You mentioned nobody is around, so if you can tell me a little bit more about the civilization and things that you do have.
It's in the middle of the Sonora Desert, and the end result is. The biggest issue, the inconvenience we have is we built a road in, or we have a road in, so it's not a problem there. But it's power, and we have to generate power with diesel, and that's always expensive. We've already evaluated the possibility of putting in solar, And that's an investment we may be making, given we're happy with what we're seeing there. But yeah, power is the big issue. Water is not an issue. At about 100 meters down, there is a massive amount of water. In fact, it's a bit of a pain. We have to do a lot of bit of pumping just to keep it dry. So yeah, there is massive water, just not on surface. And we can deal with it. You can always deal with it in the business. It just takes time. But the real thing right now is establishing the structure.
So, what's the plan for the structure? What's the plan for growing the projects? And if you can also tell me a little bit about your involvement. I don't know if you live in Mexico, if you're there, if just kind of your involvement with the community there.
Well, we're very lucky in that respect. The Zacualpan, I say, historically, 500 years of mining, the people understand mining. We've got their grandfathers, fathers, and sons working underground. And I say sons, but we also have daughters, etc. It's heavily involved. We employ about 260 people there. And we certainly have no issues with the local community. In fact, they're very supportive. So we don't see an issue there. At Plomosas, it's a whole different issue. There's nobody there, and we have to bring people in. I mentioned there nobody within 20 kilometers, but 20 kilometers away, there's a small town, and we use that as a town. We board people in and then bus them in and bus them out again. So again, we're not offending anybody in the area because there isn't anybody in the area. We're providing money being spent in that little old town, and it doesn't seem to be a problem at all. So socially, I don't think either mine is a problem. And Capire, because it's generally attached to the Zacualpan district, again, we know all the people in the area. They're very supportive. They want work, they want jobs, and
No.
they don't have people running around trying to stop it.
So, Fred, do you speak Spanish?
Badly.
Badly.
It's a standing joke with my staff. Fortunately, we've got a great management team down there. They're all Mexican, by the way, highly qualified. Our guy who's in charge of the sort of numbers down there is both a CPA and a lawyer. The guy in charge of the CEO or COO is a mining engineer. Both mines are mining engineers, mine geologists. Vast majority of them speak way better English than I can speak Spanish. So I could order a beer and maybe get myself socially in trouble. But when we get into technicalities, we speak English.
Fred, do you and your team have, if you can tell us a little bit about your background, just kind of the where you come from in terms of your experience, as well as the team around you in terms of why you think you guys have the right team to succeed in Mexico.
Okay, fair enough. First of all, my business, right? I'm a CA MBA. I was teaching out at UBC at one stage, and a friend of mine wanted to build a mine up in northern British Columbia, a gold mine. And it sounded like a lot more fun than teaching 300 uninterested students. So I joined him. And we built that. It's one of the first gold mines built in BC in a long time. The Total came in, the French oil company. For some reason, they wanted a 50% interest. So we ended up having a company called Total Energold. And we mined gold, and we also had oil production in the prairies. I was the CFO, by the way. And then Agip came in, and they wanted to develop a mine up in the Yukon, and we did that for them as well. And then everybody decided to get out of the country. So I ended up selling off all their assets, including over 100 million in tax deductions. And we started working on a project called Courageous Lake. And it was owned by Wheaton River. Again, it was one that progressed. It was difficult, but all of a sudden we managed to make a lot of money in one short period of time. We were taken over, and it became Goldcorp. So at that point in time, the guys I was with, we ended up doing exploration in Mexico. And this, I built a drilling company as well. We had about 200 rigs, I guess, and about 800 people. And we were working worldwide, and that company was bought out by an investor. And one of the things that we had been working on was this mine. So we've been working on this mine now for 20 years.
So were you the founder of this company?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I saw that you guys have how many shares outstanding do you guys have? 342 million-ish?
Virtually
Something.
none that I would like to acknowledge. My direct ownership is only about 650,000, and it's primarily because we never got any cheap stock. That was all just bought off the market. When somebody says, "Hey, the stock's down," we go out and buy it. And of course, you can never sell it. But the issue was, this mine was owned by Total Energold, or by a company called Energold Drilling, rather. And Energold Drilling was taken over. Part of the deal was that we basically could pull the mine away from it. But all the cheap stock I got from building the Energold Drilling company got stuck in Energold Drilling. So, as I say, I had no interest at all in this, other than it was a subsidiary and I was managing it. And again, when we took it over, it had to get financed. So my money was put up then.
Fred, maybe this is a question for Jerry. For Jerry, bring you in. Love to see if you can break down the share structure for us, and if you want to go over ownership as well, and maybe for yourself or for Fred, just how much skin you guys have in the game.
Yeah, no, great question, Steve. So what Fred mentioned earlier was Energold originally was almost over an insider position, just on over 10%. So since they've gone private, they don't disclose anymore. So they may still have some shares positions there. This company was spun out of Energold, the drilling company. In terms of large insider sort of institutional investors, obviously it, being in the silver space for so long, Steve. Impact Silver is very fortunate to have long-term support from the Sprott ETF, Silver ETF, Global X, Crescat, and various companies have come in. We've also done financings and transactions with Samsung Trafigura very recently, last year, for just over $3 million on a financing. Again, these are large conglomerate metal smelter traders. Globally, so they're not only essentially a customer or a vendor for Impact. Basically, we sell our concentrate to them. Some of them have also become equity shareholders, so that really helps elevate the name and prestige of Impact. We're doing business with some of the largest metal traders in the world, and potentially they would also fund expansion plans as well. So aside from Global X, Sprott, the usual names in the silver space, we also have a significant amount of shares from German and Swiss investors. So they don't really disclose their positions because they don't on 13F 13, and 10K quarterly filings. They generally don't have that requirement, not being a public fund. But I would say that's easily 5 to 10% of the share float as well. The Global X, Sprott, Silver ETF holdings, they are public, and those are probably just around 10% as well.
So, and you said Sprott's involved, the Sprott Holdings.
Eric Sprott has personally come in a few times. We're not a frequent financier in the space because it's obviously an ongoing operations, but he's come in on previously personally.
And then what percentage is from insiders?
Insiders, right now it'd be just under 5%. But as Fred mentioned earlier, with the previous parent company that it was spun out of, would have been over 15%. And Fred was a major shareholder of Energold as well.
Gotcha. And then where are you guys in terms of what's the plan, Fred, for growth? Is it, and then if you can tell me a little bit also about the money cash you have in hand, are you guys looking for another raise soon? If you can tell me about that.
Well, that one's easy to address. First of all, we're well financed. We've got about $50 million in the bank, no debt, long-term debt. And yes, we are looking for growth. Now, we've got internal growth at the moment when we bring Capire into production. Well, the Capire mill and Noche Buena into production. We're looking at, with Plomosas, Another target up there as well that we would incorporate into the production to Plomosas. But at the same time, we are definitely looking around. We've got a small team that's doing that. And the advantage we have in Mexico is we're focusing on Mexico, is we have some people who are long in the tooth in working in Mexico, Mexicans themselves. So many of the things that would bypass a Canadian company going down there looking at a project, these are privately owned mines or projects. And basically, they're simply not available unless you happen to be another Mexican who can sort of sit and have a tequila with each other and bring it on. And we've got two of those at the moment that we're now doing due diligence on. We dropped another two that we were looking at earlier, just because you look under the and you there's a problem. And but yeah, we think that we can basically acquire indirectly or directly another mine that has potential for growth. What we're looking at is smaller mine operations where they're basically mining and feeding themselves, but they have a good property position. So you can the permitting's all been done, if you will. We can get in there, we can expand what they're doing, and then we have our own drills, so we can actively go and drill off these projects fairly cheaply as well.
I don't know if this is a question for Fred or Jerry, but you guys mentioned Sprott when he bought in. If I were to ask Eric, like what excited him most about Impact, what do you think? What are people excited about when they do buy in? Is it the potential? Is it the scale? Is it if you, I mean, what are people most excited about?
That one for Jerry, but I can say that right now it's the silver. We're a pure silver player. We're highly leveraged to silver. And if you believe in silver, you get more leverage out of the stock we have than you're going to get out of the silver. And Jerry,
Yeah,
you've run the numbers on several occasions.
definitely. Yeah, so we look at this quarterly filings, and obviously a lot of our peer groups, Steve, and we also follow BMO's excellent silver pages. So you'll follow that Hecla, First Majestic, any of the major silver players. They're now more of a gold and diversified player. They obviously all report in silver equivalents, but specifically on the mid cap side, you're looking at maybe 50%. On the large cap side, less than 40% really come from silver, right? So what Fred mentioned, we're one of the probably, if not the purest silver player out there with a clean balance sheet and high optionality to leverage the price of silver, right? We're 90% plus silver on most quarters, and we're just scratching the surface, right? 20 years in on this 500 plus year land package, we've now just overproduced 13 plus million ounces, no debt, nearly half the market cap, Steve, in cash. And obviously a lot of growth prospects. So I think optionality and the size of the potential in the area, Steve, has always excited Sprott. I mean, he loves optionality. A lot of the peer groups that he indexed us against have a lot of ounces in the ground, but they're optionality, right? Like Fred always says, he would mine beach sand if it made money, right? So a lot of them have 200 to 300 million ounces in the ground, but they're not pulling anything out, right? So whereas we pull it out on a daily basis, right? We're blasting out at 2 p.m. We're shipping concentrate out to the port of Manzanillo at the end of the week, right? So I think the size potential is there, and the proven operation of the impact story is a very impressive one, right? So we're in a proven area. We're in a very central area that's never had really any sort of labor shortages and disputes. Continuous operation for 20 years. You can't say that about a lot of deals out there. We have three properties that we're only producing off on one, right? Plomosas gonna have an alternate views. Capire's been sitting since 2010, but it's a permanent open pit mine that I don't think even factored in our market cap at just over 100 US.
Yeah, and you're right, Jerry. And the other thing is, we still have 200 square kilometers of highly attractive property that we each year we test a portion of it. But 200 square kilometers is a lot of land, and they've had standard joke is because it's so rugged. If you stretch it out, it's probably more like 600 square kilometers. But yeah, so there's a lot of work there, and we generally spend $2 to $3 million a year on exploration.
Well, Fred, Jerry, thank you so much. For people who want to follow your story, if you want to give your website, your ticker one more time for us.
Jerry, IPT?
Yeah. IPT on the TSX Venture, ISVOF on the OTCQB, and straightforward website, www.impactsilver.com.
For our listeners, check out Impact Silver, the website, the ticker. While I'm not giving investment advice, please do your own due diligence and follow their story. And one of the ways you can do that is reach out to them with questions as well. Thanks so much, Fred. Jerry, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Steve.
Good talking to you. Cheers.